This is episode number 314 with Mark Sisson.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin. I don't know about you, but when around 3 p.m. hits, I find myself craving the right refreshment to get me through that mid-afternoon slump. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea is full-flavored sweet tea, but without the sugar and the calories. It might take several bottles for you to believe that a delicious sweet tea can really have zero sugar and zero calories. But you know what they say, life is full of surprises. Or in this case, full of flavor. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea. Try it to believe it. For 20% off your next 12 pack, head to Amazon and use promo code 20PureLeaf. That's promo code 20PureLeaf for 20% off. We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card, you call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone if you only had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. Okay, quick math. The less your business depends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite, and you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/greatness. netsuite.com/greatness. Again, head to netsuite.com/greatness.
Welcome everyone to the School of Greatness podcast. I'm so pumped right now. I'm in Vancouver, Canada. That's right. I'm having an incredible time. I just spoke at a conference called Man Talks. That's all about how to help evolve men, overcome insecurities, and become better men in the world, better husbands, better fathers, better brothers, all those things. And we had an incredible time. Lots of great people came out. So thank you to everyone in Vancouver who came out to wait in line for me to sign your book. We had an incredible time together, got to say hi to so many people that listen to the podcast, and I'm so very blessed and grateful every time I meet someone that listens to the show. So thank you guys for listening and for being a part of this incredible community. And I had the chance to sit down with an incredible man. His name is Mark Sisson. He's the best-selling author of The Primal Blueprint and one of the leading voices in the evolutionary health movement. He's a former elite endurance athlete with a 2-hour, 18-minute marathon and a fourth-place Hawaii Ironman finish. He's got a new book called Primal Endurance that applies the primal eating and lifestyle principles to the challenge of endurance training, helping athletes overcome the common conditions of burnout and carbohydrate dependency. And in this episode, we talk a lot about how to optimize your body and your health and your lifestyle. Really, how to eat, sleep, and train in a way that will bring the most pleasure. Also, the importance of rest and recovery and how to recover effectively. How to become good at fat burning. And he talks about how to burn fat constantly throughout all day long and how to become a fat burning machine by what you're eating and how you're moving. Why inconsistency in your workout and routine can help you. And best of all, how to look good naked. That's right. Everything and more in this episode with the one, the only, Mark Sisson. Welcome back, everyone, to the School of Greatness podcast. We've got a huge guest in, Mark Sisson, in the house. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, man.
Appreciate it. Yeah. I'm pumped. I heard about you, I think, probably like 7 or 8 years ago when I started kind of getting in the blogging world, the social media blogging world, and just kind of like dipping my toes in. You were a huge success already in the fitness space, and you had a book out called Primal Blueprint.
Right.
Or The Primal Blueprint. Is that right?
Correct.
And I think you had like a couple hundred thousand subscribers at the time. Maybe this was 2009, 2010, but you were already kind of just crushing it in the fitness space and doing very well as a blogger. And that's how I first heard about you.
Right.
And since then, you've got like tons of products in terms of, you had supplements before then, but you've got about 20 something books, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got food, products, training, restaurants, you've got everything, right?
Fitness programs.
You've just kind of expanded the brand, which is really cool to see. And you've got a new book out today called Primal Endurance as one of the new books. And I want to dive into what you just mentioned beforehand, before we started this interview, is talking about your lifestyle and the whole philosophy and the approach to your lifestyle. Whether you want to be an endurance athlete or have endurance in your life, or you want to put on mass, or you want to get lean, or whatever it may be,
right?
You have a specific lifestyle that I've always been excited about. When you came in here, you were talking about how I have the same stand-up desk as you, and I was like, yes, if I'm doing something that Mark is doing, I feel like I'm doing it right.
Right.
So I just want to dive into what this philosophy is and how you actually live.
Right. So my main goal is to live awesome. That's the tagline. That's the motto of our company. Primal Blueprint, live awesome. And what does that mean? It means extracting the greatest amount of pleasure, enjoyment, contentment, fulfillment that's possible out of every possible moment. Mm. Now, there are going to be bad times, of course, but to live in the moment, to appreciate the now, to appreciate the relationships, to have fun when you're working out, to enjoy every single bite of food you ever eat and not choke something down just because it's healthy.
Mm.
So it really revolves around orchestrating a life way of pleasure, of hedonistic experiences in the context of this, you know, modern world that we have here, understanding that we sit here with hunter-gatherer genes that have certain sort of proclivities and expectations of us that we can meet either through natural means or through artificial means. And sometimes there's not a right answer, but it's about choices. So how do I make choices that serve me in the short term, that give me pleasure, that don't harm me in the long term?
Mm.
So it's sort of an overview of what we're up against here. But you know, as you drill down, as you boil it down and distill it down to what does it look like? It looks like, you know, what are the types of foods that we choose to eat that turn on genes, that build muscle or burn fat? What are the types of, you know, how much sun exposure do we get that allows us to make vitamin D and get tan, but not too much so we get burned? How much sleep do we get that? And by the way, sleep is a very pleasurable thing if you are willing to acknowledge that.
Yes.
How much sleep do we get in a way that reinvigorates us and allows us to be creative on a daily basis and not brag about how well we do on so little sleep? You know, so all these, you know, how do we use our brain on a regular basis beyond just the rote stuff of, you know, checking the PDAs, but how do we do puzzles? Do we play games? Are we creative? Do we play musical instruments? Do we learn a language? How do we use our brain? All these things make the totality of the human experience, and I love to look at all the ways in which we can choose these behaviors that manifest themselves as pleasurable, enjoyable, providing contentment and fulfillment, and build us toward a better human being.
Mm. When did you start to, you know, take this on? You know, because you were a triathlete?
Yeah, well, I was a marathoner in the 70s.
Wow.
And actually the late 60s and early 70s.
Wow.
And from there went to triathlon. I was always trying to, you know, improve
optimize performance. Yes.
Using the tools of the day, which were pretty rudimentary. It's like, all right, run a lot of miles and eat lots of carbohydrates and you'll be where you need to be. Well, you know, that's what we knew. That's all we knew. And it wasn't exactly appropriate.
Mm.
So over the years, I got injured. I got sick from the overtraining, from the diet, which was very highly inflammatory and caused sorts
pastas
of
pastas and breads or what?
All that stuff that they said you had to eat.
I had so many pasta meals,
yeah,
and pizza meals,
yeah,
and lasagna meals the night before every game.
Yeah.
And I remember just being so exhausted in every game.
Yeah.
High school, college, pro, it was just like exhaustion.
Right.
yawning. I would yawn
so
much. No,
that's a classic symptom
like,
of it.
Why am I yawning?
Right. I'm supposed to be excited about
exactly. The
game and
I
pumped
take a,
up.
I wanted to take a nap.
I wanted to take a nap. Yeah, exactly. So we have these sort of old conventional wisdom technologies that we were using to improve performance, theoretically.
Yes.
And they weren't. So I basically ended my career early, prematurely. I was too injured to continue running. My health had suffered. I had, you know, arthritis and tendonitis and irritable bowel syndrome, and I got sick a lot, and I had heartburn and hemorrhoids, and I was like a real wreck. I mean, here's theoretically the picture of health because of the training I was doing, but
sure.
I was falling apart on the inside. So
wow.
I sort of rededicated my life to figuring out how I could be fit and strong and lean and happy and healthy at the same time without being overly, you know, without too much struggle and sacrifice and suffering. You know, is there an easy way, an easier way to be all those things I wanted to be that allowed me to have more pleasure in the moment
right. And
didn't sacrifice my long-term health? So that was the big shift in me. And it's been going on for 35 years
wow.
And it continues to go on. So as soon as I made that shift, I started doing the research. I wrote my first book in 82,
wow.
You know, on how to train for triathlons. And even then, I was calling upon evolution as the main basis for how we train. And I was looking at the previous few years of triathletes, because in 82, there hadn't even been a decade of triathlon training.
Wow.
But I'd already recognized that we were doing it wrong. We were training too hard. Too much redlining the heart and the body and there was a better way and an easier way to do it.
Right.
So I started recognizing that back in 82. And then it's even up until 3 years ago, when I started researching the Primal Endurance book, I started thinking, well, you know, all of the science continues to show us that the old choice was probably a wrong choice, that reliance on carbohydrates and that intent of managing our glycogen stores in our muscles was kind of the wrong approach. And maybe we ought to come at it from the exact opposite end of the spectrum, which is how do we become really good at burning fat? And in so doing, spare glycogen. And in so doing, unburden ourselves of having to take in so much carbohydrate in the form of pasta and breads and cereals
right.
and rice and crackers and cookies and all the other stuff.
Sure, sure. And you're 62, right?
Yeah.
Right? And you're like leaner than anyone I know. So what's the most effective way to burn fat and still be strong?
Yeah, of course. You know, as we said initially in the Primal Blueprint, mm-hmm. And I've said it decades before I wrote the Primal Blueprint, 80% of your body composition is determined by how you eat. So there's a certain way in which you can eat where you can literally reprogram your genes to derive most of your energy from your stored body fat.
Really?
Yes. So as opposed to waking up, being hungry, having breakfast, being hungry at the 10:30 break, being hungry for lunch, having a snack in the afternoon, having a dinner and having a snack before you go to bed, which is the sort of standard American approach, like even mm-hmm. the old bodybuilders would say, don't go more than 3 hours without eating or you will cannibalize your muscle tissue.
Right.
That was all based on an assumption that we had to burn carbohydrate and had to access glucose and glycogen for the muscles to be able to continue to work. It never contemplated that we are obligate fat burners. We are born with this amazing ability to extract calories from stored body fat.
Hmm.
And the reason that we don't as we go through life is we present our, you know, you're 2 years old, you're eating cookies and crackers and
right.
mushed peas and
ice
all sorts of carbs,
yeah.
all that stuff. And so your body learns to depend on glucose, on carbohydrates as a source of energy and never really gets to the point where you force it to burn fat.
Wow.
So what we do is we shift the diet around. It's not painful. You get rid of the breads, the pastas, the cereals, the crackers, the cookies, the candies, the sweetened soft drinks. Well, it does sound kind of nice, doesn't it? But what you're left with is meat, fish, fowl, eggs, nuts, seeds, vegetables, a little bit of fruit,
mm-hmm.
Some starchy tubers like sweet potatoes, things like that. Those are great tasting foods if you
yeah.
eat them right. And they're real food. And they're
real food.
And you can use butter and lard and you can eat bacon on this program. And what it does is it reduces the amount of simple sugars and carbohydrates you take in and just sort of gently forces your body to upregulate all the enzyme systems that access stored body fat and burn it and allow you to have more energy throughout the day without having to eat so often. So the first thing that happens is your appetite self-regulates. So now you get into this space where you become a good fat burner. You start to melt away
your
excess. You're not as hungry because you're always carrying around a meal.
Yeah.
It's on your thighs, it's on your ass, it's on your belly, wherever it is. It's, you know, that's your body becomes so adept at accessing those stored calories. It says, I don't need to eat. I'm really not that hungry.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's so empowering for so many people.
But when I still love sugar,
yep.
But I used to be really bad at sugar. I feel like I have much more under control. But I feel like when you're eating a lot of candy, sweets, and sugar, you're never satisfied. You just want to eat more and more and more.
But that's the,
until and you're
that,
sick. And
no,
you're
exactly.
Like, oh, yeah, I'm full because I'm sick now.
Yeah, I mean, the stories of Lamar Odom eating 4 pounds of candy
before games
or whatever.
Crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, we're all hardwired.
But look where he's at now. Right. You know, it's like
we're all. But it's sort of. By the way, sugar is a very addictive substance.
So addictive.
So. You know, we're all hardwired to seek out sweet things. That's part of that hunter-gatherer DNA that we all carry
really?
That hasn't changed in thousands of years.
So yeah. How do we shift our minds?
So the first way you do it is you go from the craving, which is what you're talking about. Like you crave sugar, so you eat sugar, and then that just promotes more craving, and it gets you into this sort of addictive cycle. You're actually producing sort of opiate-like substances that are occupying receptor sites that are giving you sort of a feel-good experience.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to kind of be willing to get rid of that. So you get rid of the candies, you get rid of the sweetened beverages, the soft drinks, the teas, and you get rid of the carbohydrates that not all carbs, but the breads that convert to glucose in the bloodstream so rapidly. So now you've lowered your blood your glucose experience on a daily basis. So now the brain is starting to get, yeah, I don't need to really get that much glucose. You know, the body is burning more fat. As a result of you being able to burn fat, you create these byproducts called ketones, which the brain loves to burn ketones and burns them preferentially. So you need less and less sugar to, you know, maintain clarity throughout the day. If you haven't become fat adapted and you're a sugar burner, which is what it's not a derogatory term, but we use a term to describe people who haven't become fat burners yet. They're sugar burners.
Uh-huh.
If you don't eat, it's true. If you don't eat for a couple of hours, your blood sugar dips because you haven't learned how to burn fat yet. You don't know how to access it. You can't take it out of storage and burn it. So now the blood sugar's low. The brain goes, I got to go get some more glucose. I got to get energy somewhere.
Sugar or something.
So you have the bagel at 10:30 in the morning.
Oh, my gosh.
Or you have the
– tastes amazing.
Well,
for an hour and then it's
no, exactly. But then you're hungry again, and that's this vicious cycle. So if we can, you know, take the steps, we say it takes 21 days. That's why I have a book called The 21 Day Total Body Transformation. 21 days of this, cutting these sugars and starchy, simple carbohydrates, out of your diet and just focusing on healthy fats and lean proteins and vegetables.
Right.
Your body gets the message and it says, I'm not going to be getting that much glucose. I'm going to learn how to burn fat and I'm going to do it well. Damn it. And then it takes the fat out of your body fat stores. So over time you lose a pound, 2 pounds a week, and you trend toward your ideal body composition.
Wow.
So all of this is a 10-minute long-winded, answer to your, question of how, you know, what does it take to burn fat? It doesn't take a lot of exercise. It mostly takes the dietary shift. Right. You got to do some exercise. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do anything, but you can choose to do some exercise.
It'll help accelerate
it. Help accelerate it a little bit, but most of it happens as a result of the shifts you make in your diet. Absolutely.
It's all in the kitchen.
Yep.
So you can get abs in the kitchen and not do anything different working
Absolutely.
Out. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the difference between, because it sounds like a little paleo-ish, what's the difference between primal paleo and like a bulletproof, which has kind of been picking up as well?
You know, they're all sort of versions of a similar theme, which is to cut the sugars way down, cut the processed carbohydrates way down, get rid of the industrial seed oil. So that would be the soybean oil, the corn oil, the canola, which are causing inflammatory responses in a lot of people, and just kind of go to real food.
Yeah.
With the Primal Blueprint, we said at some point, you know, dairy, if you like it, why not include it in your diet if you don't have an issue with it, right?
I love it.
So, but all these foods exist on a spectrum. So dairy, you know, there's raw milk, which is good for you. There's A2 protein, which is a form of casein. We could have a whole discussion about the different types of cows and the different types of protein that they make. But on the far end of the spectrum, the good end, there's butter, there's cream, there's all these things. At the other end, at the bad end, there's 2% skim, homogenized, pasteurized, non-fat whatever, stay away from that stuff.
Yeah.
You know? So, all these foods sort of exist on a spectrum. So cheeses, for instance, part of the dairy family. I love cheese.
I love cheese.
So, you know, we include it in our eating strategy because we say there's no real reason not to.
The right cheese.
Paleo. Yeah, exactly. Artisanal cheeses, and there's good and bad cheeses as well. But on the paleo program or the paleo strategy is pretty strict for a lot of people. So
no
they would
cheese,
say
right?
No dairy at all of any kind. So no milk, no butter, no cream, no cheese. So that's, you know, there are little variations in this here.
But mostly whole foods.
Mostly whole foods is what we're all looking at. I mean, even if you look at a vegan experience these days or a vegetarian experience, it's really these dietary programs work largely as a result of what you eliminate. Not what you're eating.
Right.
So if you eliminate the crap and you're left, even if you're only eating vegetables, as long as you're getting enough protein, you should be fine.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. What is LGN? And how does it motivate you?
Yeah. So LGN is Look Good Naked. And it's a, you know, it's just a little mnemonic device we've used for the last 10 years. I think people have used it before, but we sort of made it a meme for a while. And it's just this idea that one of the things that we are seeking is we want to look good naked. We want to, and I think that happens for a lot of people. That's a subset of their greater goal, or it's a side effect of the original intent. The original intention for a lot of people go to Primal Blueprint and to Mark's Daily Apple, my blog, is they're frustrated. They're sick. They can't get off the meds. They've had health issues and they've not been able to resolve them through the traditional medical channels. So a lot of people come to me having had that experience in the medical community, not a good one. So the first thing that they recognize is, you know, their blood sugar normalizes, or their polycystic ovarian syndrome goes away, or their irritable bowel syndrome goes away, or their GERD, or whatever it is that they're dealing with goes away. And that's wonderful. And then they go, oh, by the way, I'm losing some weight too. That's awesome as well, and I'm starting to look good naked.
Right.
So it becomes a nice side effect.
Yeah. Gotcha. So what's a typical eating day look like for you? Like, what are you putting in your system?
Yeah, so
– what time do you put
in? Yeah, so I wake up in the morning, and I have a cup of coffee around 6:30 in the morning.
Wow.
I like coffee. I'm a big fan of coffee. I don't eat until 12:30 or 1.
Okay.
So I use what we call a compressed eating window. Mm. Now, I will wake up, and I have plenty of energy because I'm so good at burning fat. I've trained my body to do that.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life. So don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. Like when you're trying to buy tickets for the best seat at your favorite team's big game, or when you're hiring for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. With ZipRecruiter, you can find qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it.
And I believe finding the right team member is one of the most important steps in setting up my company for success. We like to ensure our new hires will be a good fit before they're even on the team. So I am grateful that I have ZipRecruiter's help when we want to grow the team fast. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
That so you I don't have the energy. You don't.
I have the energy. I'm not in a slump waking up from having not eaten for the 12 hours that I was sleeping. It doesn't matter. I'm so good at accessing the stored body fat. I got plenty of energy. In fact, I'll go to the gym at 9:30 or 10 o'clock and I'll do my workout fasted. Sometimes it'll be a heavy leg day. Sometimes it'll be, you know, intervals of some kind. Again, I don't.
And I feel fine. Right.
And then when I get home, I won't eat. If I get home at like 11, I still won't eat for an hour and a half, partly because I'm not hungry. Partly because I got stuff to do, right?
Right, exactly.
But I'm not compelled to go, oh, my God, I just finished my workout. I must eat a post-workout shake or something.
Yeah, there's so many people that say that, you know, have a protein shake within the first 30 minutes of waking up to start your metabolism, drink a shake right after a workout. Why do they say that, and why do you think you don't need to?
I think you don't need to because if you become good at burning fat, a couple things happen. First of all, you have the energy to get through the day. Second of all, if you're good at burning fat and you're not hungry, I say if you're not hungry, why are you eating? If you're not hungry, don't eat, because that's kind of key. When you become good at burning fat, you don't enter that cannibalistic zone that the bodybuilders enter when they're dependent on carbs a lot, which is you start to tear up your muscle tissue. Because when you're a sugar burner and you run out of sugar, and or you're depending on carbohydrate. By the way, I use glycogen, glucose, carbohydrate, and sugar sort of interchangeably.
Okay.
But when you're a sugar burner and you haven't eaten for a while, you've depleted the glycogen in your liver and your muscles because your body's expecting you to have sugar all this time, and that's where you store it, but you don't store very much of it. So when you run out of it, the brain...
You need to fill it up.
The brain goes, hey, something's off here. We got to eat. And if we don't eat, then here's what we're going to do. We're going to signal the adrenals to create cortisol, which is going to go tear down muscle tissue so that the amino acids can be sent to the liver to be converted into glucose so I can fuel the brain. So it's like you're tearing down the muscle you just spent all the time trying to build because of your dependence on glucose. All that goes away when you become a fat burner. When you become good at burning fat, now when you don't eat, your body knows how to access the stored body fat, so your energy levels don't dip, your blood sugar doesn't dip. And so you don't cut into muscle tissue.
Gotcha. So you can train really hard to try to build muscle,
yeah,
and you're still saying you don't need this like post-recovery shake right afterwards if you learn how to eat the right way.
Exactly. Now, if you're the old paradigm and you are the carbohydrate-dependent athlete, then, yeah, you probably do want to eat a post-workout meal because you probably will cannibalize some of the muscle tissue because you're working on an entirely different operating system.
Interesting. Man, and so that 21-day transformation is how you get off of that cycle and get into the fat-burning cycle, essentially?
Exactly.
Okay, cool. Yep. We'll have that linked up here as well.
And also the Primal Endurance, the book. This has it all in here, but this is really specific to people who want to race 10Ks, 5Ks, marathons, triathlons, Spartan races, all that stuff.
Gotcha. Yes. Have you done a Spartan race yourself?
I haven't.
I did one, a short one, like a 5-miler. It's pretty intense.
Yeah, it's intense.
It's fun, though.
I wish it had been around when I was in my
prime.
Because
you would have been a machine.
Because I was a good marathoner, but I got my, you know, I had my DNA fitness thing done a few years ago, and I was like 57% endurance and 43% strength. What that means is it made me a pretty good endurance athlete, but I was never going to be the best in the world because you'd have to be 80% or 85%, right? But it also told me that I had the strength, which is sort of in retrospect, that's why I realized I used to lift weights even when I was a marathoner. I lifted weights in the gym.
Yeah.
So I maintained my strength.
Wow.
And I was a gymnast before I was ever an endurance athlete.
Really?
So you look at the Spartan races and you go, well, that's, you know, it's got some gymnastics, some, you know, some parkour type movements.
Rope climbing.
Some heavy lifting, all that stuff combined with the endurance.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been
your thing.
My thing.
Wow.
But right now it's like, I'm too guarding of my current fitness level and health, I don't want to get injured, mm-hmm. you know? And
yeah, of course.
So like the big thing for me is my ultimate Frisbee game once a week.
You're an ultimate Frisbee?
Oh my God.
I love ultimate Frisbee.
You got to come out to Malibu, man.
College champion with my team in college.
Get out of here. Which
it's been a small D3 school. Wasn't that
whatever, man.
Time. But,
you know what? So we have a game in Malibu every Sunday at 9:30. It's
I would
crazy.
Love to come. It's been years, but I'd love to come.
No, no, no. It's the most fun.
Can you wear cleats?
You can wear cleats. I wear my Vibrams, but guys wear cleats.
Wow.
No, it's anyway. So you know,
I'd love to come.
You know what a good workout it is. Then
that's one of the hardest workouts. An hour of ultimate, and I'm exhausted.
We play 2 hours, by the way.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. I would be like, sub me in. 15 minutes. I'd have to get back in the shape for it. Wow, that's cool. In Malibu, huh?
In Malibu, yeah.
9:30 a.m.
Yep.
I'll be there.
And there's guys from West Hollywood that come out there, too.
I will come out for sure. Was it like 30 guys go out there?
We get – last week we had 6-on-6. That's the most fun.
Oh, wow.
In the summer we'll have 10-on-10 sometimes. It's a little bit crazy, but yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Okay, so you wait until about – you have coffee in the morning, then you wait until about noon to 1.
Oh, yeah. We haven't even gotten to any food yet.
What is that meal?
Yeah, so that meal is typically – it might be what I call a big-ass salad. You know, it's a big salad with lots of vegetables in it and some form of protein with lots of salad dressing. If you make
dressing, have your own salad dressing.
And now I have my own salad dressing because I couldn't find any that I could put a lot on and feel like this is
that doesn't fill with sugar,
exactly. or unhealthy fats or unhealthy oils like the mm-hmm. soybean oil that I was talking about or the mm-hmm. canola. You know, it's like no canola. This is our salad dressings are made with avocado oil, which is the healthiest of all the oils. Wow. So I have a big salad with chicken from leftover from the previous night or a piece of fish or something on it.
Nice. Okay, and then.
And then I go till the middle of the afternoon, maybe late afternoon. I might have a handful of macadamia nuts. Mm-hmm. We do make a protein bar now.
Yes,
all my products I make for myself, by the way. Just
right,
so you know,
right.
I make stuff that I wish existed.
Uh-huh.
That so
this one, the dark chocolate almond bar. It's amazing.
It is amazing, and it's got 15 grams of protein, but mostly it's 9 grams of collagen. So it's got more collagen than a cup of bone broth. So, you know, I love bone broth, but when I'm driving my car, you know, with a
we pull out a bottle of bone broth. Yeah.
So the bars are there because I'm really into the repair. So one of the issues I have as a 62-year-old guy trying to keep up with 20-somethings on a sprint to the end zone to defend a long pass is my Achilles. You know, the collagen really works well.
Really?
Absolutely. Keeps me, I know that I can tell the difference between when I've been eating a lot of collagen and when I haven't in my Achilles. Yeah.
What happens? Just tighter when you're not?
Yeah. They feel like they're going to snap.
Really?
They'll feel sore enough that I'll choose not to back way off for weeks at a time. So I might have a dark chocolate almond bar. In the afternoon,
I'm gonna have to get all this stuff.
Yeah,
I have to try it all out. Okay,
and then in the evening, you know, I have a piece of steak. I've got this great Wagyu short rib that I get. It's my favorite cut of meat anywhere in the world. And I'll have that with a whole ton of steamed vegetables or lightly grilled vegetables with some butter on it. And once in a while, I have a glass of wine, and that's it.
That's the whole day.
Yeah.
So don't need much more than that.
No. So here's the thing: you may have gleaned from that it's not a lot of food,
right?
And one of the things that you realize when you become good at burning fat,
you don't need a lot of food.
You don't need a lot of food. So a few years ago, you know, I had this thought experiment. I thought, well, you know, I used to my whole life see what I could get away with, see how much food I could eat and not feel like I was going to puke or not feel like I was going to gain weight, right? It's how much food can I eat and not gain weight. I think a lot of people live their lives that way. They sort of finish what's on their plate. They basically, there are a lot of people who run or work out just so they can eat more. Like, why do you run so much, Lewis? Well, I run because I can.
Because
I love to eat. I love to eat. Well, dude, I love to eat too.
Yeah.
But I don't want to beat myself up
just so
I can eat more. So that was the thought experiment. And then if you reverse it, you go, well, if that's the case, what's the least amount of food I can eat and maintain my body mass, maintain my energy, not get sick, and most importantly, not be hungry?
Mm.
And it turns out it's about 30% fewer calories than I used to eat.
Wow.
Yeah. So I learned within the last 10 years, I've learned, you know, to sort of halfway through a meal, ask myself just sort of subconsciously, am I really hungry for the next bite? Not am I full, not am I, you know, whatever, but am I truly hungry for the next bite? And if I'm not, I'm okay pushing the plate away, wrapping it up, throwing it away, giving away, whatever, because I know there's food wherever I want, whenever I want. So it's not like I'm trying to pack on the...
You don't need to stuff it, yeah.
Yeah.
What if you just enjoy it?
Well, if you enjoy it, keep going.
Yeah.
But you have a lot of times you get into that space where you go, you know, am I eating this because
it's still there?
Because it's still there.
Yeah.
Am I truly eating it because I enjoy it, or mm-hmm. or am I, you know, like I used to, I had a habit of 1 half gallon of ice cream a night.
Oh.
For 5 years.
That sounds amazing.
It was amazing, and I was it was in my training day, so
right.
burned it all off. Never yes. gained any weight. I actually weighed probably 20 pounds less than I weigh now.
Wow.
Yeah. But it was 1/2 gallon of ice cream every night, and it was like I couldn't only eat a pint. It was like a pint of ice cream. Don't even like. Why am I going to get started on that? I'm just gonna you know
three scoops. Yeah.
Rip your throat off and want more. You know, it's whatever. Yeah. Rip your head off. So I would, and if it was 10 o'clock at night and I didn't have any ice cream in the house, I'd get in the car and drive and get some. It was like a real addiction, a real sugar addiction. Clearly, I got rid of that. But it was, you know, I wonder at times whether I had described this, it's 1/2 gallon is my dose of ice cream.
Right.
And even though I could have satisfied myself with a pint or 1/2 pint, because it was there, because I you know, could eat it and I could mm-hmm. get away with it, that became my dose. It's like people have a you know bag of potato chips. You know, you have a little individual serving size of potato chips,
the whole bag.
And you have one this big. They're still, to some people, each one is an individual serving size.
It is.
Right?
It is. It's tough to just have a few chips in the big bags.
Yeah.
So what are these, you know, for athletes listening or for people that want to get back into their athletic ways? You know, I used to be a professional athlete and I consider myself an athlete. You've got 9 pieces of primal advice for athletes. But I think a lot of entrepreneurs could live this way too and still like be better entrepreneurs, be more productive, have better relationships, be sharper, all these different things.
And I think everything you do to be a better athlete makes you a better entrepreneur.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But you talk about adequate sleep. And this is something I've been talking about a lot lately on my podcast and bringing out different sleep experts. But why just emphasize, is sleep important for you?
I mean, sleep is when the body renews and regenerates, repairs mm-hmm. itself. It's when a lot of the neural networking happens. To overlook sleep and to think, well, you know, I can sleep when I'm dead. Well, you know, that just is such faulty logic.
Yeah.
It's so critical and so important. I try to get 8 hours a night myself. If I get less than 6 for some reason, I feel it. I know it. I try to make up for it. I try not to let that happen. Mm. I try not to schedule late nights because I wake up at the same time pretty much every morning. So if
6 a.m. wake up or?
Yeah, 6:30, 6 a.m., 6:30. But if I were to go to bed at 1, I'd still wake up at my normal time.
Yeah.
And so I have to really force myself to – not force myself because I'm tired at the end of the day. I have this whole wind down process.
What you know,
so my wife and I will watch some we'll do some television after dinner. We'll catch up on we'll do some binge watching, catching up of
yes.
whatever the latest series was. But around 10 we'll break. I have a pool in my backyard and a jacuzzi. Mm. So I go the pool's unheated. So in the wintertime it might be in the 50s.
Wow.
I'll walk into the pool and hang out there for a couple of minutes and get really, really cold, but not to the point of shivering, just it's kind of a process in and of itself. Then I'll get in the jacuzzi. So my wife and I'll hang out in the jacuzzi. We'll just recap what the day's events were. It's very, we turn off all the lights in the house. We have a fire pit out there. So there's a real sort of a primal caveman kind of thing to that. Then I'll just finish off with another minute in the cold and towel off and go up to bed. And I sleep like a baby as a result of that.
Wow.
So that's
hot cold therapy.
Yeah, the hot cold therapy. And that's kind of how I wind my day down. And that prepares me to sleep. Brings my body temperature down, which is you know they say that you should have your lower body temperature to sleep better.
Mm.
We keep the room around 67.
Yes,
we have blackout curtains, so it's a real cool sleeping environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes. I always like to keep it cold.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay, and so if you do like a cold shower before bed, you think that's a good thing?
I think it's a good thing. Yeah,
it'll help you sleep better.
I think so. Try it. I mean, you can't hurt.
Okay.
Yeah.
You talk about stress and rest balance. What does that mean?
Well, you know, there are certain stresses in your life that are unavoidable.
Mm-hmm.
Work stress, commuting stress, sometimes training
Waiting in the lobby for 45 minutes stress. Sorry.
Well, I'm more stressed about the traffic coming from.
Right.
Because you never know what it's going to be. It could be, you know, I planned for 2 hours. I got here in an hour I got here in less than an hour.
Right.
So
that's good.
Yeah. But so you have these stresses. And some of them are imagined, even though your brain thinks they're real. They don't exist. Mm-hmm. You know, our stress mechanisms in the body they evolved to handle true life or death situations. You know, a tiger bearing down upon you, an infection that's gonna kill you, a broken leg that may, you know, whatever, have its impact on you. Not, you know, am I gonna miss my kid's rehearsal? Or am I gonna be late for work or whatever? Those cause stress, but they're not life threatening. And yet the brain sees them as life threatening. So, the message here is that you sort of have to identify stresses, and then appropriately orchestrate certain rest and recovery. Now, we talked about this before the show that meditation is a form of rest and recovery. But just taking maybe if you need a nap, you can do that. But certainly that goes back to the whole sleep thing being critical. But the other part of rest is recognizing, if you're an athlete, recognizing when it's just inappropriate to go out and train just because your schedule says, I have to go do 6 miles today. Yeah. You know, if you wake up that day and you feel like crap and the metrics, you know, the heart rate variability is wrong or you're just not feeling good, then you're better off taking that day off than plowing through it and being able to write in your logbook, yeah, I got through the workout, felt like crap, but I got through the workout.
I was just rested that day.
Just rest on that, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, and the third thing you talk about is personalized schedule, and inconsistency is the key.
So in Primal Endurance, we go back to that philosophy that the body, you know, is a very sort of temperamental, it's in temperamental states back and forth. Sometimes you're in a state of energy and health, and sometimes you're not. And you can't really plan on when those states are going to be, so you have to be willing to listen to the cues. And for that reason, we say inconsistency is the key to consistent racing if you're an athlete. Mm. So it's when you feel good, you can go hard. When you don't feel good, back off. Take time off. We use the term periodicity, so you can periodize your training so that there are tranches of training days a week at a time where you're really going deep, hard, and then you might take a week off or take it real easy and back off. You can break those further up into quarterly, annual segments, always with the idea that some days are going to be good, some days are going to be bad. You're going to trend toward wanting to build, to ratchet up over time, but you're okay kind of not doing stuff as hard. Mm. And so it doesn't become this linear kind of progress. It becomes more of a fractal thing that trends toward improvement.
Gotcha. The next thing you talk about is aerobic emphasis, train slow to race fast. What does that mean?
Yeah, so this is the toughest one for current endurance athletes to really grok. And that is a lot of athletes, and I was certainly one for 20 years, you basically go out and you train to hurt. So you run or you ride or you swim at a heart rate that's, you know, 75 to 90% of your max heart rate. Mm. And you see how long you can hold right? And so you're training to hurt. And it hurts. You know,
it does
hurt you, but you feel tough as a result of it. But the problem is you're not really training the body to become more efficient. You're just training yourself to hurt. So when we talk about efficiency in racing, we go back to the original premise about glucose and glycogen being sort of this determining factor in muscle tissue. When you run out of glycogen, you sort of hit the wall. So how do you manage glycogen? Well, one way would be to eat a lot of carbohydrates and drink a lot of gels during the race. The other would be to become so good at burning fat that you never really tap into that glycogen.
Interesting.
So we train you to become so good at burning fat. Now, that's the 80% that we talked about with the diet. But the other part of that for the endurance athlete is if you train at a low enough heart rate that you are it's typically it's 180 minus your age. So let's just say you're 40 years old. So 180 minus 40 is 140. So that's going to be your maximum heart rate. You're never in your training, you're not going to go above that. You set your watch, you set your heart monitor to give you a signal as soon as you get above 140. Now, you start out and you at that 140, maybe you can only run 13-minute miles. Even though you're capable of running 7-minute miles at 175 beats a minute, or whatever.
Right.
But now what we're doing is we're measuring how good you are at burning fat. And we know that at that number, 180 minus your age, that's the highest rate that you can put oxygen through your system and know that you're burning mostly fat. And
really?
We know that because that's the pace at which you could breathe. You could close your mouth and breathe through your nose and get plenty of oxygen. Or that's the pace at which you could be with a training partner and talk without losing your breath. Mm. Once you start losing your having to catch up or having to get winded, we know that you're going into burning, you're building up lactic acid.
You're not burning fat.
You're not burning fat, or you're burning less fat and starting to burn more sugar. So we want you to be at the highest end of your fat burning without tapping into your sort of glycolytic abilities. And we know that number to be generally around 180 minus your age. So now the idea is you go out and you train, and the first day you go out, you're running 13-minute miles, and that's as fast as you can go without the heart rate bumping up to over 140. Well, you're not very good at burning fat. You might be good at burning sugar. Like I say, you might be able to run 7-minute miles or 6-minute miles.
Right, right.
So, but over time, if you stay at that high heart, at that maximum heart rate of, which is low, much lower than you're used to, you find yourself running 12-minute miles and then 11-minute miles and then 10:30s and 10 and 9:30s. And what it means is, even though the heart rate hasn't changed, you're still putting the same amount of oxygen through. Mm. Now you're burning more fat. So you're becoming more efficient at burning fat. So that when you do decide to ramp up and throw in the interval training and the weight stuff that we have you do in the gym, now you're starting from a baseline of being a much better fat burner than everyone else around you.
So just so I wrap my head around this, is your heart rate dictating how much fat you can burn based on how
– No. So your heart rate is dictating how much oxygen you're putting through your system, and it's – because it's delivering oxygen to the muscles, and the muscles are using oxygen to burn fat.
Mm.
They can burn glycogen or glucose with oxygen, but they also burn without oxygen.
Okay.
So, you know, like you could run a 100-meter sprint with your nose plugged, and there's no oxygen involved. You'd still want to
breathe.
You'd want to breathe at the end of it, but and you'd have to breathe to recover, to recycle, but you don't need that oxygen to burn that full amount. So when we train the body to become more efficient at burning fat, and by the way, the heart, it's interesting. The heart, we're not training the heart to be stronger. The heart's already pretty strong. So the heart doesn't get stronger. The heart doesn't have a PR, right?
Okay.
You know what I mean? It does what it does. But what happens is you become more efficient with the materials that the heart gives you. So if the heart is pumping oxygen, X amount of oxygen, and you're not good at burning fat, you can't do anything with that oxygen.
Mm.
But the better you are at burning fat, the more you can use that oxygen and burn the fat in the mitochondria and avoid having to go into that glycogen storage situation.
Okay.
All right? So it's really about training you to become more efficient at burning fat.
Gotcha.
Not forever, but it's certainly through the base building phase.
Okay.
And that's a huge hurdle for a lot of endurance athletes to overcome, because they go, wait a minute, I can already run 7-minute miles. Why am I dropping down to 13s? But invariably and across the board, we see as if they stick to this for weeks at a time, they become more and more efficient. So now we know that now you're running 7 minute 30-second miles, and you're getting 92% of your energy from fat.
Wow.
So that when you do decide to run those 6-minute miles, now you're starting from having burned more fat, and you don't have to use as much glycogen.
Interesting.
To get there.
Interesting. Okay, cool. Structured intensity. What does this mean?
Partly means you've got to go into the gym and do some heavy lifting.
Yes.
But not a lot.
Okay. And this is if you want to be an endurance athlete.
If you want to be an endurance athlete, one thing that athletes used to avoid like the plague was the gym.
Right.
If they went, they would do, 50 repetitions of a light weight, because they're thinking, well, when I'm running a marathon, I'm running, 3,000 repetitions of a leg turnover.
Why
don't I simulate that in the.
But you're saying lifting some weights is going to be key to your endurance as well.
So what happens in any long endurance contest, in addition to running out of fuel, is you run out, your power decreases because you haven't trained the power. An example would be you've got three hills to climb in a bike race. The first one, you go up with 100% of your power. The second one, even though you have energy, your muscle fibers are they've been exhausted, and they haven't trained to sustain your power. So now you go up the second hill at 82% of your max power, and you might go up the third hill at 65% of your max power. Well, if we could train those muscle fibers deeper and deeper to sustain power for those efforts that require actual power, we can maybe go up that first hill at 100 and go up that hill, second hill at 100 and that third hill at 95.
Right.
So we do this work in the gym where you load muscle fibers up with fairly heavy weights. It's typically 80% of your one rep max. And we do sequential, repetitions with, with sequential rest in between. So it's not like you do three sets of five and you stop. It's like you do three repetitions, rest 10 seconds, three repetitions, rest 10 seconds, two repetitions, rest 10 seconds, rest 20 seconds, until you can't finish one good rep, mm-hmm. and then the workout's over. So it's not – you just did one set, and it might have comprised 200 repetitions.
Right, right.
But that maximally loaded the fibers deeper and deeper and gave you this ability to sustain power.
Gotcha. And the next thing you talk about is lifestyle practices. What do you mean by that?
Well, so now we talk about everything else but the training. So if you're, you know, it's spending time with your family, it's playing games with your, you know, playing frisbee with your dog,
yes.
Playing ultimate with your friends. It's it's all of the other things that make life enjoyable. Mm-hmm. That as an endurance athlete, I know I used to go, well, I can't afford to do that. I might get injured, or I might. You know,
right, right.
I can't go skiing because I might twist a knee. Well, if you do the training right and you spend that time in the gym, you're less likely to twist a knee skiing than if you were, than if you were just going to the slopes without having right. done any training at all.
Sure, sure.
Right. So, we want people to have a full life, because training for endurance contests should be preparation for an undertaking that you would not want to encounter on a daily basis. You know, you want to wake up in the morning and go, oof, I got that 10K today. I got to go clean out my GI tract. I'm so nervous, you know.
Right, right.
But you want to be that nervous because you right. want to put it all on the line that day.
Yeah.
What we're saying is don't put it all on the line every day in your training. Have fun. Do the right sort of training that builds this beast that when you get to the race, you're going to enjoy it. You're going to have fun. You're going to perform probably better than if you'd done the old paradigm of training.
Right.
But you'll have lived a life in the interim. I mean, so many of my, you know, ex triathlete marathon buddies, you know, couldn't have a relationship. It was just, mm-hmm. you know, imagine.
They put all their energy in this one thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, the wife says, can't you stay home and cuddle, you know, on a Saturday morning? And the husband goes, no, I got a 100-mile ride I got to do.
Yeah.
You know, and, then I'm going to go, you know, run after that. And then I'm going to take a nap because I'm going to feel like crap because I did so much. So we try to look at the life in general and say, well, an awesome life includes participating in these events.
Participating in life.
And doing yeah. well, but it also includes participating in life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So not to the exclusion of all of everything else.
What feedback would you give an entrepreneur listening or someone with a busy schedule about how to live this lifestyle? You know, they want to be a primal athlete in their daily life, but they also want to run a business and they're spending a lot of time and energy into this one thing.
Yeah.
Maybe their entrepreneurial life is like this marathon life that we're talking about, where they put all their energy into this one thing and they're not doing anything else.
Yep.
What would you suggest? You're doing it. You've got the healthy lifestyle and you're running a multi-million-dollar business, multiple of them. You know, what would you suggest to them?
So, there are ways to have it all, and but you can't be like the best endurance athlete in the world and a really successful entrepreneur. So you got to mm-hmm. choose how much of the endurance athlete you want to be. I would suggest that for me, the best choice was I want to toe the starting line with the least amount of training possible to still kick 90% of the field's ass,
mm-hmm.
right? So for me, the goal is almost how little can I get away with
to get the maximum result.
To get the maximum result without having to go, okay, because if it's going to take, you know, 20% of the effort to get 80% of the result, mm-hmm. I'm not willing to put in the other 80% to win the thing
right.
anymore. And maybe I won't even win the thing because maybe I'll have overtrained. So now you're back to the entrepreneur / endurance athlete. Get a stand-up desk and a tread desk. So I have a treadmill.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of my employees has a treadmill at their at their work. Now I don't force them to use it. So yeah,
they can,
but they can. They request it. I give it to them. So you can put in 8 miles walking easily, and no one on the phone or even on the Skype will know that you're walking.
Yes,
you know, because you can make it uphill, whatever. Take frequent breaks and, you know, drop and do some push-ups or mm-hmm. some air squats. What I do is I like to go for a paddle. And I'll bring a recording device on a stand-up paddleboard. And if I get my great ideas when I'm paddling, so I'll just record my ideas. right? Or what I don't
fall in.
Well, it's a plastic bag. By the way, I almost never fall in.
That's
so
good.
I typically will paddle for an hour and a half. I'll step on, get wet up to my calves,
wow.
and step off, wet up
good.
To my calves. But the other thing is hiking. So if you want to do some serious hiking,
mm-hmm.
Bring a headset and your phone. Make business calls while you're hiking. I got a friend who's basically a billionaire, and that's where he makes most of his business calls.
Wow.
He does 2 hours of hiking a day. Nobody knows he's hiking. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And then so the grunt work you do in the gym takes almost no time. It's not like you have to spend an hour mm-hmm. in the gym doing any of this stuff. Like I said, that maximum sustained power workout I just described is basically a short warm up, maybe 10 minutes of doing it, and then you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could do it in 2 days later or 3 days later, you didn't do it hard enough that
gotcha.
Day, right?
Gotcha.
So we want you to take a week to recover from that, from that specific work. Doesn't mean you can't go walk the next day or do anything else the next day, but you just wouldn't want to repeat, you know, a heavy leg day the next
right,
day.
Right, exactly.
So it's how you – this is the sort of orchestrated structural components to this thing where when you put it all together, you can have it all. You can be an effective, efficient entrepreneur, and you can compete against all of those other guys who are, you know, claiming they're going to kick your ass in the 10K or the Spartan race or whatever it is.
Right. I love that. We talked about the diet already, but the last thing is proper recovery. So how much, you know, when do you know you're overtraining?
Well, so there are all sorts of metrics. I mean, you just wake up in the morning, and if you haven't slept well and you're sore, then you're probably overtraining.
Should we not feel that soreness at all?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's appropriate to feel. You can feel it on a day to day basis, but not on a week to week basis.
Mm.
So you can feel sore after a workout, you know, today, or yesterday, or 2 days ago. But I think if you're still feeling sore for days on end, then you're probably linking together too many hard workouts. Or you might have overreached
gotcha.
On one of your workouts, so that's one indicator. We have a metric that we use called heart rate variability (HRV), and you can buy these apps that measure the time between heartbeats.
Mm.
And you'd think that you'd want to see a metronomic beat, like an exact amount of time spaced between each heartbeat. But it turns out that that's an indication of overtraining.
Okay.
That in fact the heart We want the heart to be beating almost in demand to whatever is being called upon in real time. So there might be a 0.8 second skip and then a 1.1 second skip and then a 1.2 and then a 0.8 and then a 0.9.
Okay.
And that's heart rate variability. And if you've got a good heart rate variability score, it's probably a good indicator that you're rested and well trained and ready to go again.
Okay, cool. Couple questions left for you. This has been great information, and I want people to go check out primalblueprint.com so you can see all the books, especially Primal Endurance, the new one, but all the books, the products, everything else. If you want to own a restaurant, you can learn about that too. A few questions left for you. What's a question that you've done tons of interviews over the last decade alone from everything you've been doing? What's a question that no one's ever asked you you've always wanted to answer?
Oh, wow. You should give me time to think about that one.
Is there anything that comes to mind?
No. Because I've done a lot of interviews and I've been asked a lot of questions. I'd have to give that some thought.
Okay. What's something small you've done that you're really proud of that not a lot of people know about you?
It's not that small, but not a lot of people know that I helped get triathlon in the Olympic Games by drastically changing one of the rules of the sport.
Really?
Yeah.
You got it in the Olympic Games.
Well, I didn't personally get it in, but I was on a board of the International Triathlon Union, which was the International Federation for the Sport of Triathlon.
Wow.
And for the first 15 years of triathlon, there was no drafting allowed on the bike. And I convinced the board to change that rule to allow drafting on the bike, which pissed off every top triathlete in the world at the time, but it was the only way we could get into the Olympic Games.
Really?
Yeah. So that move allowed us to have races where 50 people could be close to each other, and you didn't have to disqualify them for being too close for drafting.
Wow.
And it made for much more telegenic events and things like that.
As opposed to just following one person at a time.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So.
And then you qualified for the Olympic trials, right?
In the marathon, yeah.
In the marathon, not in the triathlon.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. What was your fastest marathon?
I ran 2:18.
Yeah. That's good. It's really fast.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't fast enough, but it was. But it wasn't. You know, in those days,
that's
I mean,
fast.
You know, it was
70s and 80s or whatever it was. It's really fast. Okay, it's one of your It's one of your final days.
Yeah.
Many, many years from now.
Yeah.
And all your books have been erased. Everything you've created is gone.
Yeah.
And you have a piece of paper by your bed, and all your friends and family are there.
Yeah.
And they ask you to write down three things that you know to be true about your experience in life. The three simple truths that you would pass on to them to,
yep,
essentially all your lessons down to three things. What would they be?
First one is, if it were easy, everyone would be doing it. Does that resonate with you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
The second one is, absolutely find as much joy in every moment as you possibly can. In other words, live in the now.
Mm-hmm.
And the third is, I'm going to say, always be in a relationship.
Always be in a relationship.
Yeah.
What type of relationship?
Either with someone else or yourself.
Hmm. Okay. Why that?
Well, because I think, first of all, I think we're sort of groomed to be in a relationship of some kind.
Mm.
And that's, I think, not just groomed. We're hardwired to be in a relationship, I believe. And it doesn't have to be the same person forever, but, you know, sort of, we have relationships come and go,
mm-hmm.
and I just find that most of the time, when you're in a relationship, you're experiencing the better parts of life. And if you're not in a relationship, then if you're in a good relationship with yourself, and you have that self-love, you're still able to experience that stuff.
That's cool.
But as opposed to saying I'm a loner, I'm fine alone, and I can cruise through life and do whatever it is.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's cool.
That just came to me, by the way, so I haven't been working on that for a long time.
No, that's great. It's great. Yeah, yeah. What are you grateful for in your life right now?
Oh, my God. The list is so long. I'm grateful for my path and how it got me to where I am. So I'm grateful for every bad thing that happened to me, and there were a lot of them. I'm grateful for my wife and for my kids. I have an awesome wife, two awesome kids. I'm grateful for the time that we live in that would allow me to be able to talk to millions of people.
Mm-hmm.
Because 20 years ago, that would not have been able to do this.
Right.
You know, the internet and this ability to reach out to millions of people, tens of millions of people,
wouldn't
have existed. So I'm grateful for that. I'm certainly grateful for my health.
Mm-hmm.
Grateful for good food. I mean, and by the way, I think that's important, is to spend a little bit of time each day. I'm grateful for this awesome pen that just writes perfectly when I'm trying to take notes, you know? Where does pen come from?
Right. Okay. There you go. I love it. Final two questions. If you had all the money in the world to spend on one thing, and you had to spend it on something, what would you spend it on?
Wow.
To solve like a problem in the world.
Yeah.
What would you spend it on? That would automatically change it forever, that problem, and be solved.
Yeah. I mean, I would spend it on a food project that had that not only fed people, but fed them without causing further downstream problems. I'll give an example of what I mean by causing further downstream problems. We can provide grain to most of the world, but all that does is just keep them alive long enough to get type 2 diabetes or scurvy
diseases,
or beriberi disease or whatever.
Costs more money.
Right. So and I don't mean to sound harsh about that, but there's a lot more to it than providing grain. So I would like to fix the world's food problem. I'd probably do something like a massive grazing program that would reclaim desertified lands using Alan Savory's methods of grazing beasts, growing grass and grazing beasts and creating more topsoil. That would be the single project that I'd probably
That's cool. Final question before I ask, where should we go for you personally? Primalblueprint.com, but where are you personally online that we should connect?
Yeah, Mark's Daily Apple is my blog. That's the best place to find out about what I do, and we blog there every day. And
every day you got an article, right?
Yeah. Every day for 10 years.
And you do most of the writing, don't you?
I do a lot of the writing.
A lot
now
of
I have, you know, Mondays is a Q&A. That's easy. But Fridays we do a success story. So that's always somebody writing in their story. It's been that way for 8 years. It's phenomenal. We have a recipe on Saturday. Link Love on Sunday. So yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, I want to acknowledge you, Mark, for your, for teaching the young generation how to live young at an older age. It's incredible. You're 62, right?
Yeah.
62. I'm 33. I feel like you're way better shape than I am.
I don't know about
that. You've got a ton of energy. You're so.
We'll find out when you come play frisbee.
Yeah. You'll be in better shape for sure the first time, maybe a few more times. But your consistency in educating the world and educating yourself and constantly learning and evolving is so inspiring. So I want to acknowledge you for your incredible commitment and consistency to teaching and educating, and your reach to 10 million people and beyond is happening in a powerful way. So I appreciate and acknowledge you for that.
Thank you so much.
The final question is, what's your definition of greatness?
Definition of greatness is living a life of grace and ease and success by your definition. Mm.
Mark Sisson, thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
You bet.
And there you have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please share this with your friends. LewisHouse.com/314. All the show notes and the full video interview is back at that link on my site, /314. Go ahead and tweet me at Lewis Howes or tag me on Instagram or on Facebook and let me know what you thought of this interview. And also tag Mark as well over there. All of his information is back on the show notes as well, so you can follow him on social media, check out his books, and all of his incredible products. Thanks again for all you do to support the podcast and the movement of greatness. You guys are incredible. I love you very much. And you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.
Save big money on everything now at Menards. Make quick work of your outdoor cleaning project with Masterforce outdoor and landscaping tools. The 80-volt cordless trimmer is powerful, efficient, and hassle-free, so you spend less time working on your yard and more time enjoying the results. On sale now through May 19th. Check out our wide selection of Masterforce tools and see the rest of our deals on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I've learned the hard way that constantly holding on to your emotions and repeatedly choosing to not talk about your feelings will only make you feel worse and worse. And up until about 10 or 11 years ago, I was afraid to talk about my trauma that I experienced. And I know we all carry around different stressors, big and small. And when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. But therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to fit your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Lewis today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/L-E-W-I-S.